Welcome to the Clinical Research Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Leanne Wolke. In this podcast, we bridge conversations between industry, thought leaders, and patients. Utilizing a unique perspective, integrating years of coaching with Tony Robbins, coupled with scientific and industry experience, we have vulnerable and real conversations with the goal of impacting the industry in meaningful ways. Today on the podcast, we talk to Jess Thompson. She's a seasoned professional who's concerned about the well-being and development of industry professionals. She founded the Clinical Research Project Manager Association, CRPM, to provide education, career opportunities, and a supportive community. CRPM is committed to addressing the unique challenges of clinical research professionals through tailored wellness initiatives and empowering members both professionally and personally through training, networking, and professional development. Jess emphasizes viewing clinical research professionals as whole individuals, fostering a culture of well-being beyond project delivery. Okay, so today on the podcast, I have Jess Thompson. Jess has a fantastic story, and I'm actually going to let you, Jess, tell us a little bit about where you've come from and where we find you today.
Sure. First of all, thank you so much, Leanne, for having me. Really excited to talk about this. I've always been very open about my mental health and some of the struggles that I've dealt with as a professional in the clinical research industry, because it is a very taxing and demanding industry to work in. Really gone through a couple different kinds of mental health help and started to find what really works for me. And I think it's such a personal journey that we really don't speak about a lot. So I'm very excited to talk about it and kind of shed some light on the options that are out there and just give a little bit of hope to those that might be in a really bad place right now, because I've been there and I'm so thankful to say that I'm in a much better place now.
How would you describe, just for a little bit of frame, how would you describe the stress when you were working in the clinical research world?
I don't even know if there's words to describe it. And I think it really depends on your role, because the stress is a little different. I've had the opportunity to work everywhere from a lab supporting clinical research samples to a research coordinator at a site, management at the site level, then moving over to the CRO level and managing studies there, and then finally at the sponsor level. My current role is really working on an organization that I've founded, just because I've recognized a lot of the issues that were consistent across sites, CROs, and sponsors, and how to really take away some of that stress that's inevitable. I found that a lot of the stress that we have is because we just don't properly plan and we don't properly train individuals. And so, you know, you're kind of just chasing your tail. And as a perfectionist, very type A, that is hard. And I think that that's really what most of our industry is. Are you know, made of type A perfectionists who are very good at what we do, but it can really lead to a detriment in our mental and physical health. So I think it really just depends what level you are or what your role is in clinical research, and company culture has a lot to do with this as well, because once some of those companies get very money hungry, that is very much a detriment to their workers.
So how did you begin to become aware of something needed to change, or you needed to take care of your mental health?
Unfortunately, I hit rock bottom. I recognized that there was, you know, some issues going on, and I was having panic attacks and crying between meetings, but work was so busy that I just felt like I couldn't even address it. So what I've learned is that, you know, if you don't take the time to really care for yourself, your body's going to make you stop. There's going to be a point where you were forced to take time and reevaluate everything that is going on and what it's doing to your mental and physical health, because it's just going to stop working. That's what happened to me. And I hate that it got to that point, but I'm so thankful for that time in my life, because it really allowed me to learn about myself and to be able to speak to others, to really help them recognize those very intense signs of burnout or anxiety and panic disorder and depression. But I will say what finally led me to seeking out help was I just couldn't make it through the day. I was having panic attacks. I was crying between meetings. I got to a point where I couldn't pull it together. A lot of times during meetings, of course, with my team, I would put on the brave face, cover up my eyes with concealer to show that I hadn't been crying. But there came a point where there was just no more to give. And that's really when I started to seek out additional help and go from there and really start focusing on my mental health.
So you began to feel the need to focus on mental health, and then most recently, you've taken on some new treatments. Tell us a bit about those.
Sure. So last summer, I'm very open about my mental health, so I don't want any of this to trigger anyone. So just kind of a trigger warning here. Last summer, I did an intense outpatient program for about 8 weeks, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Really, it was therapy, group therapy, activities, coping mechanisms. I did that for about 8 weeks, and you do see a psychiatrist there. So I got on anxiety medicine and depression medicine that really worked for me. I will say, if you're new to psychiatric medications, any of the mental health things, it takes a little while to figure out what works for you. So don't be defeated. Don't feel like you can't be fixed. It just is going to take some time. So I did this for 8 weeks. I continued with psychiatry appointments and therapy appointments for the last pretty much year. And then recently, I had been really doing a lot of research on ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. And I decided, after speaking with a couple of people that had done it, to give it a shot. And because they had such great things to say. So I finished my 6 sessions of ketamine treatment last Thursday. And yeah, it's changed my life. So I'm excited to talk about it.
So 6 sessions. And how long did it take from the first session to the last session?
Okay, so just a little background about what ketamine-assisted therapy is and kind of your options with it. So I chose the in-person option because I have anxiety. And if I'm being honest, I was scared. I like to be in control. So the idea of being on something that would kind of break down my ego and break down my walls, and I wouldn't have control in that environment, scared me. So I did the inpatient option, or not inpatient, I'm sorry, the in-person option with nurses and doctors present and a therapist for most of the sessions. So it is 6 sessions over 2 weeks. You have 3 1-hour sessions and 3 2-hour sessions. You have the option to have a therapist or not have a therapist. And they do allow for your family members or your driver to sit in with you just to kind of make sure that everything's going okay, or if you need to get the one of the medical professionals, they're right there. You do have to have a driver just because you are under the influence of ketamine, and that is not safe to drive. But yeah, so that's kind of a high level what is ketamine and the logistics of ketamine, I guess I should say.
Right. Now I know you talked about doing it in person as opposed to, I know that there are some folks that can do it at home with like telehealth therapist on the line. So many different options. I think that, gosh, if we look at one of the things that came out of the pandemic is the boom in telehealth and these new options that didn't exist. And now we're seeing this new ushering in of new treatments like ketamine and the psychedelics, following closely on their heels. So you said, how you feel like your whole life has changed. Talk to me about that. Like, let's start off with, you go to the first session and some sessions you had a therapist there, some didn't. I followed along as you shared some of your story online. You go to the first session. What are you expecting?
I have no idea. I'm gonna be honest with you. I had no idea what to expect. I had never taken any medications that would make me hallucinate. It was funny whenever I got there, they asked all those questions. Have you ever taken any medications that make you hallucinate? And I literally said, no, because I'm scared. And she looks at me and she goes, you know what you're doing right now, right? And I was like, okay, yes, but there's a medical professional here. So I'm not as scared. So it's an IV treatment with when you do in person. I know when you go do the home method, it is, I think it's a pill or like a dissolvable. It is an IV treatment. So they hook you up to IV and you start your session. My first one was an hour. They base it on your BMI and then they increase it based on your reaction to this. So the first two sessions, I was very lucid. I felt like my walls were broken down and I was just talking. And I don't, the best way to describe it is that literally anything that came to my mind came out of my mouth. And, which I, this, my brain is very strange. I've learned through these sessions that I can be talking about, I don't know, project management one session and then my dog the next sentence. And in between that, I'm talking about mac and cheese and how I want some Zaxby's and who knows what else? So you kind of go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Liam. What were
No,
you going to say?
all over the place. Okay, so here I'm wondering. You're talking about Zaxby's. You're talking about mac and cheese. You're talking about your dog, project management. Yet you said this is life-changing.
I know. You just got it's a wild ride. So there are
Okay.
six sessions. Again, the first two sessions I was very lucid, so they increased my dosage for my third session because she was like, you're too much yourself right now, and we need to get more in your subconscious. So we increased from there, and we got into more trauma-based issues. So if you've ever done EMDR, you kind of, or I think it's EMDR, yeah, you walk back through the trauma experience, and it kind of takes a long time. I tried EMDR. I always left those sessions feeling more heavy and having to remember some of the trauma that I'd gone through. So I asked if we could address it and just walk through it and try to get through all of that without my ego being in the way and just using my subconscious to create that new neural pathway of how it occurred, what happened, and how I move forward from that. So that session was an hour long. That's what we talked about from the beginning. We just kind of jumped right in and talked about the whole situation, walked back through it, but then talked about how to move forward from it. And it was really deep. It was really hard. That session, it was really heavy. If you've ever done EMDR, you know how you leave that session and you feel very heavy. She did, like, my therapist did ground me after that, talking about my dog and something to bring me in, back to reality in a positive way. But I will say that after that session, I was feeling very heavy. I was very anxious. I almost had a panic attack and all of those kind of things, which had I had not felt that way in a really long time. The next day, I felt really depressed and had a lot of those depression symptoms. And I did a video on this and could post it on LinkedIn just because I wanted to be very honest about what those emotions felt like, and what it felt like in that moment.
And that was
Thankfully, I
session
was
three.
that was session three. Yes. Thankfully, that afternoon, I had session four coming up. And I talked to my therapist then and just said, hey, we've already addressed this. Can we move on past it? I don't want to talk about it in this session. So this next session, I talked about perfectionism and procrastination and how I know that those are bad things in my life and why I can't get past those, and like talked about some of my limiting beliefs around those. And I came out of that session feeling so much lighter, because I think that at least the way that I felt after it was that I had moved past that trauma. I had talked about all of these things that were really tough for me. And even in the first two sessions, I talked about kind of the surface level things. Some of the, I was recently laid off. And so talked about that, how my emotions towards that. Again, your ego is kind of removed. So you're just talking about how you feel without necessarily worried about what your therapist is thinking or judging or anything like that. You're talking very freely, which I know that can be kind of scary, but at the same time, it was just so emotionally freeing for me that I didn't have to worry about it. Like I didn't have the anxiety about the conversation I was having. So session four, we really went through all of that. That was the third and fourth session were the ones that I felt like the most hallucinations with. It was so wild, and I think that explaining it is hard to do, but in my mind, it was almost like when we went back through the trauma, it was like my mind was a shipping container lot, like area. And the crane went and picked out that container and put it down and opened it. And it, so it was almost like that was like a memory that I was going into. And then after that, we were able to store it away. And which was very fascinating the way that my brain kind of operated with this. But then when we talked about perfectionism, it was more of like I was able to see more inside of me and why I felt the way that I needed to, why I felt like I needed to be a perfectionist, and what those limiting beliefs were. So it was just a little different. After session four, I honestly felt amazing. I felt so much lighter. I did talk to them during session four to ask, okay, my emotions are really heavy right now. I'm feeling things so deeply. And they said, you know, that's really common, especially as you get into more trauma-based issues. It's really common to feel that so heavy because, at least for me, I don't allow myself to feel. I kind of just move past. I push it down, and but then breaking down those walls forced me to feel it. So they said, you know, that's normal. And just to keep talking to my therapist about it and, you know, just work through it, feel the emotions. So session four was so much better for me. The aftermath, I just felt so good. I mean, I started to panic a little towards the end. They do have options if you start to panic as well, which is good. Again, control. So I was able to get something to kind of calm me down. And yeah, and so session four, after that, I really did not experience any negatives. I know it's a lot of information, so I'll kind of stop for questions or comments or anything like that.
So, gosh, it sounds like such a vulnerable position. Did you
Yes.
know your therapist ahead of time?
I did not.
What do you do? You don't just, did you just like search on the internet, ketamine, Nashville, and we came
Literally,
up, let me
yes.
call him?
That is exactly what I did. So
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I know. So predictable, right? My millennial self Googling exactly what I'm looking for. So yeah, that's exactly what I did was I looked up ketamine therapy. I knew that I wanted to do the therapist with it. You have the option to not, but I really felt like if I was investing in myself, I wanted to go as deep as I could. I wanted to really work through a lot of the things that had been going on and I've carried for most of my life. So yeah, they have a therapist there. I did not know the therapist, which I think is why I was just kind of talking about everything the first two sessions because I was still lucid. I was still like just having conversations. We talked about traveling, we talked about all kinds of stuff. But with that, I still felt like I was getting through like 6 months of therapy in one session because I was just talking about it. She would kind of steer me in a different direction and say, well, what do you feel about this? What do you feel about that? So it just felt like such a good investment in myself because I was getting through so much. The reason I didn't do the therapy sessions in five and six is because I had nothing else to talk about. And usually I go to therapy with like six bullet points and then I have like additional bullet points I want to talk to later. But I just felt like I got through years of therapy in such little time because my walls were broken down and I was being vulnerable for the first time in my life.
Did did you go into the sessions with a list? Like, these are the
Yes.
things I want to talk about.
I did. So you talk to your therapist ahead of time and say, she like I went to my first session and said, these are the things that I'd like to address. These are the things I'd like to talk about. If I feel confident and comfortable with you, I do want to get into some trauma, but I need to build that trust first. And she was very understanding of that, you know. So yeah, I kind of went in, but again, I plan everything. So you don't have to go in with that. You can just wing it and talk
Just
about
talk about your
it.
dog. Like, but
But
what
yeah,
if somebody
exactly.
doesn't know? Like, was there any surprise that came up, like trauma that you didn't recall or that you had suppressed or things that you didn't realize were, you talked earlier about the body having its breaking point, and Vessel van der Kolk talks about the body keeps score, which the idea is that the body is always listening. A lot of times people will say something and they'll say, oh, my bad, or me bad. And I was like, no, you're not bad. Like, your body's listening to that. You're not bad. You
Yes.
might have made a mistake, but you are not bad. Like, anything that you attach I am to becomes your identity. So if someone doesn't have that awareness, because you've done therapy, you've done work, you've mm-hmm. done a lot of self-development work. If you have the classical type A accountant or whatever, like somebody who's more cerebral, engineering, somebody who maybe doesn't have that sense of personal actualization, self-exploration, mm-hmm. are they going to still get the deep insight you had, do you think?
I think so, because again, you're breaking down the ego. And I think with a lot of people, that's really what it is. Like, you know what's wrong, but you won't admit it to yourself. And once you have to break down that wall and that ego, it really forces you to kind of address what you're thinking and, you know, allow yourself to even think those things of or feel those emotions. There was some things that came up and I was really shocked about, because I've read The Body Keeps the Score and I don't think I understood it from the perspective of what it was like until I felt it. So after I walked through the trauma experience, I get dry needling in my back. Every time they touch me, I would jump. Every single time. Even though I was expecting it. If I get a massage, I jump. If I go to the chiropractor, I jump. I don't know what it is, but I think it's just my face being down and not being able to see behind me. After we went through the trauma experience, I had a dry needling appointment 2 days later. I stopped jumping. And my chiropractor was like, Jess, you haven't jumped once. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? Like, just the fact that that trauma was in my body in that way, that it kept me on guard and, you know, in that fight or flight response.
Sure.
Even this many. Yes, exactly. There we go. And I jumped one time, but usually I jumped every other time, but it was after she had said it. So then I became conscious of it, but I was shocked. Like, how, even though reading that book, I never really understood it until that happened. And it was like, oh my gosh, I released that in a way that it wasn't at the top of my mind anymore. It was really just, you know, in a different way. And same with TMJ. I have TMJ because I clench my jaw. I have not had my jaw lock once since
then.
Okay,
I'm going to stop you right there.
Yeah.
As you said, I have TMJ. So again, it becomes your identity.
Yes, good point.
Rather
than exactly.
I've experienced TMJ in the past.
Thank you. Yes.
Leaving
you
absolutely. Open to a different reality after that point.
Absolutely. No, thank you for that, because that is what I want to be conscious of. So I have experienced TMJ in the past and it's been something that I've struggled with. But since doing this, I've noticed that I am not experiencing those same symptoms and my jaw's not been locking. And I think it's just that whole, your body really keeping that tension and where it stores that tension and being able to release that is something that I honestly never thought that I'd be able to do. So, which is really cool. It's been a really unique experience.
So, okay. And, you know, there's some data that suggests how ketamine works. And Andrew Huberman at the Huberman Lab has a fantastic podcast that goes into ketamine and explains all of the different pathways and how it contributes to neuroplasticity. So you really are creating new neural pathways and new, you know, some of the ideas that some of this you won't even be aware of for up to 6 months later. How is life different now post-treatment?
Sure. So with this, I did all the research. If you know Myers-Briggs, I'm INTJ. I'm going to be like, I'm looking in everything. I'm making sure that this is the right decision for me.
Where did you look for your data and your research? And knowing that you work in clinical research, like, I have no doubt that you did the research, but where did you go to get information?
Sure. So I listened to a couple audiobooks from some of the leaders in ketamine treatment and ketamine solutions. Mm-hmm. I looked at the FDA's website to see all, you know, the package insert for ketamine. You know, I'm going to look at all.
Love it.
And then I also looked at some of the academic journals to see MindBloom, which is one of the at-home treatments. They did a study on the difference or on ketamine and the effects and the experiences, all of the side effects, that kind of thing. So I read a couple academic journals, articles, and I also talked to some folks who had done it before and their experiences. So I really tried to get the scientific side of things. I also spoke with the owner of the place that I went in Nashville, and he's very open about the fact that he has used it for his depression as well. And so it was really interesting.
Okay, wait,
to
pause for a sec. How did you find people that did it? Because a lot of times it's on the down low, and I have someone else I know who had done it, and I was like, hey, do you want to talk about it? He was like, no, I don't want to talk about it. This is very private. Like, you're crazy. And I was like, all right, I think it'd be kind of cool, but
yeah,
so
honestly,
how did you find people? Because it is still kind of
taboo.
Under the radar. Like, it's
Yeah. So honestly, since I'm so open about my mental health, I feel like people confide in me things that they usually don't confide in others, which has been really a beautiful experience for me, since I am so open about my mental health on LinkedIn and just in my personal life. So actually, I was in Spain and I was on a tour, and something just came up about anxiety. And the lady that I spoke with, she was like, I have to tell you about this. This changed my life. And I was like, I've been researching this. Tell me more. And her experience was very similar to mine. And so I honestly, that's what it was. It was just connections and having conversations and just being open about the human experience, which I feel like we're not open about often enough.
Right. I think there was after Twitch, who had been on Ellen's show, who committed suicide last year, whenever it was, is that was impactful to a lot of people to see someone who seemingly on the outside was so together or so happy and upbeat and had a family and all the reasons to live, to choose not to. For me, I had a friend who is kind of like one of those happy people that I always consider a happy person, came to me and she said, you know, I could really relate to him. She said, not that I would do anything, but I could really relate to him. And I went, wow. Like, we always hear, you never know what someone's going through. But when one of the people that in my circle I would consider the happiest confided that, I thought, who else? And I know as a Tony Robbins trainer, I do that as well, is there's always about 12% of a room that is suicidal.
Yes.
Kind of what Tony figures.
Yeah.
And so there's people around who are having a really challenging time.
Yes.
And having thoughts and feeling like they can't talk about it. So I do acknowledge you for being so open about mental health and giving people a space to talk about it, to normalize it so that someone's not suffering alone and feeling like there's nothing I can do. I don't have a way out. I'm alone in this. I'm the only one.
Yes. There's a quote that changed my life, and it said, heal out loud so others don't die in silence. And for me, that resonated with me, because it, like you said, it's typically people who are very positive on the outside and are very supportive and very kind. And what I've noticed is a lot of people that are going through these things are those individuals, because they feel they've gone through things that are so deep and so hard that they don't want others to feel that as well. And I mean, just like Robin Williams, right? These people that go out of their way to make others happy are typically also really struggling on their side as well. And I think that realization people are starting to see that more often and having these conversations and addressing some of the thoughts that are hard. You know, life isn't always that Instagram perfect reel, that we have emotions, we have trauma. I know, I know. And, you know, it's just so fascinating that this is still such a taboo topic, because I've actually been criticized for being open about my mental health. I've had my previous job, one of my previous jobs actually told me that my position was compromised at their organization because I was open about my mental health. And my background is in clinical research and healthcare. The fact that we can't, as an organization in clinical research and healthcare, allow our people to speak about their mental health and and threaten jobs because of it is fascinating to me, because we are a healthcare organization, you know? And
And so, let me ask you this. When you were threatened that you could lose your job, what did that do to your mental health?
It did not help it.
You're dealing with some mental health stuff. And then on top of it, you're told, Like, it's almost like a shame. Like, you can't talk yes. about that.
Yes.
And you could lose your job. So then your financial security is now at risk. You're made to feel shamed
yes.
for talking about it. It's not okay to have mm-hmm. a vulnerable conversation. There's a book by Keith Ferrazzi called The New Way of Work. And he talks about having these vulnerable, open conversations. And even in a business meeting saying, how are you really? Because
yes.
from that place of vulnerability, from that place of connection, we can then do the work that needs to get done. But if you're asking people to just kind of, push
yes,
down,
push
repress
down.
And the things that they're dealing with, where it might just be wanting that sense of connection or that sense of camaraderie or the sense of like, hey, I got you. Let me, take that one thing off your plate so you can deal with your aging parent, your sick dog, your child, your, whatever.
Life, right?
Yeah.
Well, deal with your life. And because I'll kind of circle back because I mean, it's so important that people recognize, and this is part of the Association of Clinical Research Project Managers. The reason that I started this was because I want people to be seen as whole individuals, not as just productivity engines. When you're working with people, they have a life and their life is important. It's not just about the job, because if something happens and say that somebody passed away or they took their own life, you would be replaced at that job the next day. Or they would be searching for replacement. But the individuals who would be solely impacted are typically the ones that you are not giving your best to. And that is really what I started to go through whenever I was working through all of this was, I was having passive suicidal ideations, which at the time I didn't even know what they were. It was my passive suicidal ideations were, if I don't wake up tomorrow, it might not be that bad. I wasn't planning on acting on anything, but the passive thought was what was going on. And that is what I posted about online. And a certain individual saw this and came to me, and it was about the reputation of the organization and how it was shedding a bad light on the reputation. And for me, thankfully, I have gone through therapy and counseling and understand that this is an issue with many people. It's not just me. So I took it as, I didn't take it in a way that it was going to harm me, although it did hurt my feelings and made me feel bad and all that kind of stuff. But I'm so thankful that I'm also so self-aware and I'm open about it, because if it would have been somebody else, it could have been even worse. It could have been that last straw that really pushed them over the edge to say, okay, I don't even have a job. I can't even speak about it because it's, such a burden or such,
taboo.
Whatever it is. Exactly. And so that honestly, it just made me want to speak about it more. So I don't know. I'm just one of those people, because I'm like, okay, well, obviously there's a problem if this organization seems to think that mental health care is not health. And yeah, so
it's interesting, because in the patient side of the industry, we're getting to this point as well, where mm-hmm. we're looking at patients as, what do they really need? How do we have real conversations with patients instead of looking at them as commodities? And the same is true about even within our organizations. How do we look at people as trusted, viable members of a team instead of a commodity that could be replaced
yes.
easily? And all of that stems, we know that there's a crisis in mental health. You don't have to Google to know that's going on. Even in our little community here in Tennessee, there was 173 attempts of suicide, I believe, within the county within the last year. And of mm-hmm. those, it was something like 17 threats of suicide for teenagers. So you can see, not only are the parents stressed out, but the kids are stressed out as well. This isn't going away anytime soon. And so you sought out ketamine. What made you seek out ketamine instead of some of the other psychedelics that are coming down the pike?
I sought out ketamine just because it had been around for so long. It's been approved since, I think, the 60s, and mm-hmm. it's used in anesthesia. I've had multiple surgeries. So my thought was, I've had ketamine before. It's not going to hurt me. And because it was easier to access, because right now psychedelic research is only at specific locations. It can only be done in certain states. And where ketamine, it's more readily available. I am on daily anxiety medications, but I was still at a point in my life where I was not feeling my best, and I was still experiencing so many issues that ketamine felt like the next step. I had tried to do the intense outpatient therapy. I've been in therapy. I've tried different medications, but there was still that dark cloud. And that's kind of the best way that I've described it, is my world was just a little darker. Post-ketamine, the best way I've described it is the sun just seems to shine a little brighter. And yeah, and it's such a weird way to say it, but just the stress level, and I'm not as hurried. I'm not as anxious about getting things done. I recognize more, but I've also, during this time, let me just say that I know that there's different neural pathways that are being created. So I've really focused on trying to be the best version of myself that I can. So having a more regular workout routine, so that way this is a great time to strengthen that habit, because during the 2 weeks you are doing ketamine and about the next 4 weeks after, those are the most powerful times to really develop those neural pathways and to develop habits that are going to help you in your journey. So, you know, things like working out more, only having very positive things in my life as much as I could. There's certain conversations that I've put off until after I kind of get through this few weeks. Things that are really important to me, being more social, having those conversations to, I guess just think through does my ideal life look like, and what are those habits that I'd like to see, and really kind of focusing on those while I'm building these new neural pathways and while I feel so good, because just in case they don't feel as good later, I'll already have the habit formed in that time, because I know there's so many different things about habits, but a lot of people say 28 days. This is a little bit more than 28 days. So I figure, yeah. Hey, what could go wrong if I'm reading every day, if I'm going to the gym every day, you know? So
as part of your treatment, did they tell you that about, you know, you want to instill good habits in these next 4 weeks post-treatment?
Yes, they did. They kind of walk you through all these different things. They even say if you were wanting to learn a new language, that is a really good time to do it, because your brain, it almost puts your brain like almost in a childlike place for learning and for just seeing the world from like a brighter perspective. So trying to be more positive, putting yourself in more positive situations, having those positive thoughts, challenging those limiting beliefs whenever they occur. Ruminating thoughts, they tell you to journal as well, just so that you can kind of capture this. It's a very interesting, it was really interesting hearing about it and then having to think through how do I incorporate those things into my life.
Do they follow up with you? You know, so they've told you, you've got your last treatment. Do they follow up, or what is the follow-up plan?
Yeah. So you actually have a journal, at least the organization or the company that I went to, you have a journal online where you can communicate with the medical staff. They contact you. I think they contacted me like every other day just to see how I was doing. And then they call like once a week. The idea would be once you get through your six sessions, once you start to feel those emotions again, or you start to feel more anxious, you would go in for a booster. And so then you're kind of like part of the family at this point, at least the clinic I went to, you know, they're having conversations with you. You're hanging out and while you're doing these sessions. And so you follow up and come see them as needed. The coming months, there's different protocols, but some say like once a month for 3 months. The one that I go to, they just said, you know, once you start to feel kind of that anxiety creeping back in or that depression creeping back in, come in for a booster and then it'll help. And from all the research that I've read and the conversations I've had, it really does kind of give you that booster effect, like a vaccine, where it's like, oh, okay, here's the, here's a little bit more to, you know, continue on your journey.
So you're anticipating, and you know, if you start to feel those things again, that you'll go in for a booster.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
What would you say to someone who is curious about ketamine?
I honestly would say to ask questions, ask the questions, and talk to your psychiatrist, see if it's something that could be beneficial for you. Contact the clinic as well, and just because they'll help you determine if it is beneficial. But just ask. I think that the taboo part of it is what really holds people back, and because they're nervous about it. So just being really educated on the topic and understanding what is going to happen, what other people's experiences are, I think that'll help a lot with at least that anxiety for the situation.
And when the psychedelics are approved, which could be, you know, within the next 6 months, some of them, already some are approved in Australia.
Yeah.
Do you think that you'll try those?
For me personally, I am at a state after my ketamine treatments that I don't want to introduce anything because I feel so good. Yeah. I never thought that I could feel this good. Like I always thought that my brain was kind of a scary place, but for me, I won't, just because I've experienced such good benefits from the ketamine treatments that I'll continue on this. If there's a point where I don't feel that way anymore, my anxiety creeps in, it's not controllable with daily medications and all of that, then absolutely. But again, I would seek it out in a controlled environment. For me, that home treatments are just not for me. But if they do it in clinics, then by all means. I mean, there's research out there. And honestly, every time I talk to people about this, I compare it to alcohol. Alcohol, if it were presented today and given to the FDA to review all the risks, all the everything, I'm like, look, if you're drinking, then why won't you try something else? Because if you look at the benefits of alcohol, what are they? Nothing, really, if you really look at it. But look at all the risks and look at how, if you're using alcohol to self-medicate, think about other options that are FDA approved and have been investigated and have gone through all these clinical trials that will give you long-term effects and not give you 3 hours of feeling less anxiety, but then having your peak again whenever your body starts to metabolize and come out and have those withdrawal symptoms. So that's really how I started comparing it, because, you know, alcohol is the drug that is approved everywhere, with no research.
Socially acceptable one.
Exactly. So that's kind of how I've compared it for people that have been kind of anxious about it. As just, you know, you are kind of putting yourself in a situation where there's no benefits. Why don't we look at options that do have those benefits, especially long-term options? Because whenever I checked myself in last summer and did those 8 weeks, I was still just getting by. I was doing everything I could to get by. After ketamine, I'm living my life. I wish that I had done ketamine last year, if that would have been an option. It wasn't as popular. I wish that I had done that in those 2 weeks and then saw those results. Not to say that intense outpatient is not wonderful. It saved my life. But the results I saw so quickly with ketamine and the amount of therapy I got through in those ketamine sessions were incredible. And my world is just a little brighter now.
I love that. Thank you so much, Jess, for sharing your experience so vulnerably. Undoubtedly, you'll help others by being open and allowing them to see that they're not alone, that there's options, and that it's not so scary, and that it's, you know, a viable treatment. We'll link those books that you mentioned about ketamine, because I think the more that folks can know, the more they can make a better informed decision for themselves, whatever that is. And would love to hear, as your journey unfolds, more of it and follow along.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me and for having this space to talk about the harder things in life that, you know, we all do go through in one way or another. You know, mental health care is health. And I hope that continuing these conversations, that we really kind of erase that taboo and help others see that they're not broken. There's options out there, and there's people that are experiencing exactly that with them. So I encourage others to heal out loud so others don't die in silence.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Clinical Research Coach. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you'd subscribe and leave a rating and a review. I truly hope that you got something out of this episode that can help us all work towards our goal of making a meaningful difference in the lives of others.